Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In March, Ohio state and local leaders gathered at a Southern Ohio farm field to celebrate the groundbreaking of what will be the largest solar array in the state. Then Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder lauded the project as, quote, something really big for Ohio, end quote. But Ohio sets a low bar, ranking 30th in the nation by the Solar Energy Industries Association when it comes to solar power generation. As other states have beefed up their clean energy standards, Ohio has headed in the opposite direction. Now solar technology is making some inroads in rural communities, but face distrust of the process and concern about the impact on the vast Ohio farmlands. A planned 325-megawatt solar farm in Union County illustrates the growing concern. John Case told WOSU's Nick Evans why he started a Facebook group opposed to the project.
To say, hey, this is what's going on, and we want everybody around here to know. Not that we necessarily oppose green energy or solar farms, but the deceitful way and the very sneaky way in which it's being brought in.
Dan Guarino covers Midwest renewable energy issues for Inside Climate News. Welcome back, Dan.
Good to be here.
I said in the intro that as other states have beefed up their clean energy standards, Ohio has headed in the opposite direction. This is a function of the Ohio General Assembly, right?
It is. And also, it's the Ohio General Assembly, and then also it has to do with the kind of unusual structure of Ohio's regulatory system, which, you know, you and I have both covered over a long time now.
But
yeah, Ohio's
an
unusual state in a number of ways that makes it challenging for solar development to happen.
Like what? I mean, there was a time when there were the bar was higher, right?
So there was a time when Ohio had, in 2008, Ohio passed a clean energy law that said you had to get to a certain level of renewable energy, or utilities had to buy a certain level of renewable energy by 2025, I believe it was. And that included a solar carve-out. So you basically had to get a certain amount of renewable energy, and a certain amount of that had to be solar. It also included an in-state requirement, so that a certain part of that had to be in-state. A subsequent bill a few years later changed that. So we no longer have an in-state requirement. And the kind of this idea of really trying to stimulate projects within Ohio kind of got thrown out the window, where utilities could meet the requirements of the law by just buying power from projects that are deliverable to Ohio. And that was one of a whole bunch of different ways that Ohio has not done as much as it could and as much as other states have to try to encourage projects. You know, projects that are still happening. But Ohio is late to the game compared to states like Indiana and Pennsylvania, for example.
What is the consequences? Are there consequences to that being late to the game? You know, we learn the consequences about being late to the gaming industry. There's consequences to being late for a lot of things. Are there consequences to being late to the game when it comes to renewables and including solar?
Well, I think the big question is, do you ever arrive at the game? I mean, there's being late to the game, and then there's just being generally hostile to renewable energy to the extent to which people don't want to do projects. Now, Ohio has strong wind resources. Parts of Ohio have strong solar resources, meaning that companies want to build projects there. And it's like, no matter what the legislature does, you can't take away those natural resources. So I think that there will be a push to do projects. If you look at what's happened in Indiana and what's happened in Pennsylvania, they've both done a lot more solar, for example, than Kentucky and West Virginia, which have almost no solar. The concern is that kind of related businesses that develop solar projects, businesses that build solar panels, businesses that are kind of part of the whole supply chain, will set up shop in the states where there are a whole bunch of projects. It just kind of makes sense. Uh-huh. Especially, you know, a state like Ohio is such a short drive to a whole bunch of other, you know, other states that are nearby. So, I think there is, there is a real danger that Ohio could lose a lot of those businesses to other states by not being super accommodating to the industry.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about the impact of solar arrays being erected in Ohio on Ohio farmland. My guest right now, Dan Guarino, he covers renewable energy issues for Inside Climate News. If you have a question or comment about this topic, later on in the program, we will be taking your questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Dan, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. I read that when a company wants to build and operate a solar array, the permitting process can take as long as a year with the Ohio Power Siting Board. Why is that? And how does that compare and contrast to other states?
Well, if you look at the docket for one of these projects, it becomes clear why it takes so long. Like, the process of applying to a project is exhaustive. Once it's all said and done, we're talking about thousands of pages with lots of engineering studies about drainage, about view sheds, about all kinds of. So it's because this is a large piece of energy infrastructure. It takes a long time because it's a fairly extensive process.
And solar energy has been around for a long time. Has the technology evolved or changed much to make it more amenable to bigger projects like we're talking about?
Yes. Well, it's not that the technology has made it more amenable. I guess you could say the technology has, in that solar is just so much less expensive. And there are also just economies of scale where it's doing like a 300 megawatt project, which would have seemed just crazy even 5 years ago in Ohio. Now you see at least a half dozen projects in that, you know, kind of either at or near that size range. Uh-huh. And the reason that that's happening now and it wasn't happening before is the price of solar panels keeps going down.
Uh-huh.
Solar power is cost competitive with other sources of electricity. That's why you're seeing these projects happening.
That's the key to it. Let's talk about something like the solar farm project in Union County. How big is that going to? What they're proposing? How big and how much space would it take up? And how long will it take to build it?
So, okay, it's 325 megawatts. Just a second. I'm hearing a really strong echo.
Yeah, you got to turn off your phone.
Okay. Sound, yeah. It's 325 megawatts, which is just, for Ohio is just gigantic. It is about, The largest operating solar farm in Ohio right now is about 20 megawatts. I don't know off the top of my head the acreage, but it takes up a good chunk of the northwest corner of Union County. There's a second large project in the northwest corner of Union County. So they're looking at two really big projects. Now I say really big projects. These are in rural areas. So mm-hmm. these are projects that the vast majority of the population won't see if you live right next to it, you're definitely going to see it. And we're talking about projects that would take up combined, we'd be talking about hundreds of acres. A modern farm is thousands of acres. So mm-hmm. it's like, it's, um, So it's all kind of, I guess, a matter of perspective. It is, these are bigger projects than Ohio has ever seen. They're not, but they're still, they're for solar projects. They're kind of, this is kind of within the range of normal. It's just something that Ohio doesn't have much experience with.
Residents who are concerned have complained about solar farm runoff and flooding. Why is that a problem? I mean, they're building on farm fields that already have drain tiles in them, right?
So this is an issue that comes up in projects. I mean, this is not unique to Ohio. This is when you build solar infrastructure in rural areas, these are concerns. Managing the drainage is part of the application process. Like, you can't just, you know, you can't just come in and build these things and not have a plan for how the drainage will work. As far as the drain tiles, that's another thing that, I mean, this is something that comes up when you build solar in rural areas. This is another thing that the developer needs to account for. And the developers of these projects, they've done this before. You know, it's, I'm sure, you know, I have never taken a close look at a project from this developer, but this is a an experienced developer at the One Union County project that WOSU did the story on. And so, yeah, these are not considerations that are out of left field. These are things that would be discussed substantially in an application once this project files its formal application.
Then the complaints about setbacks, what do those involve? Aren't those mostly for because of visuals and that kind of a thing?
Yeah. So setbacks, now setbacks are a much bigger issue with wind energy because
a
wind tower, if, you know, God forbid it like should fall over, that's dangerous. Setbacks for solar is more of a visual issue, and it's, you know, it's not nearly as big a deal. Now, if you have like a house that's right next to a property line and there is a solar farm right on the other side of that property line, maybe that's something you don't want to necessarily look out your window at all the time. So there is, and actually, I don't know off the top of my head what setback rules exist, because setback rules in a lot of ways are designed for safety. And it's not like a solar panel tipping over is not really going to hurt anybody. I think it's just the larger point is that there are very few people that want to live next to a power plant, and a wind farm and a solar farm, those are power plants. I think a solar farm is more visually appealing than living right next to a coal plant, but it's still, it's large industrial infrastructure.
I was going to ask you, once somebody decides to lease their farmland to a company that builds solar arrays, what are they thinking about? I mean, they otherwise would be leasing it to somebody to farm the land, right?
Yes. And solar has been an increasingly important part of how farmers and farmland owners kind of put together their big financial picture in terms of kind of making ends meet. It is part of a kind of diverse, I was going to say diverse portfolio, but that doesn't quite sound right. But
it's a diverse, it's a way to diversify.
Exactly.
The land use.
Yeah. And it just kind of shows the divide in rural areas between those who own land and those who are renting land, and those who have large pieces of farmland, and those that have maybe just the land of their houses. Because the financial benefits of leasing for a large solar project are going to be going to the landowners. They're going to go to the landowners. They're also going to go to local governments, local school districts, county government, township governments whoever gets property taxes would also benefit in a substantial way. But in terms of individual benefits, it really benefits landowners. And I mean, I think this is something that if just from a policy perspective, if you want to make it so that these projects are less controversial, there've got to be ways to make it so that the financial benefits are spread around a little bit more than they are.
I'm wondering about, you know, people, there's been similar kinds of conflicts when it comes to selling large amounts of land for housing developments too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
yes,
that's been similarly conflicting.
Well, there is a larger issue here, which is that people, you know, Union County is part of the Columbus metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. It now is the Union County's largest employer is Honda. There's a gigantic auto manufacturing plant in the southern part of the county. This is a county that is rural in character that has been transformed into having large parts of it that are now suburban and that now have heavy industry in auto manufacturing. And I think if you're a long-term resident or if you're someone who'd bought land there to retire, you look at this kind of transformation that's happening and it's a place that is changing. It's just different. It looks different. You talk about, you know, if you bought a house out in the country and a giant housing subdivision's being built right next to it, a lot of times you're not going to like that. And it's this similar idea of how the land in certain places is changing. And that is, I mean, I think that's true for all of us. I mean, I think if anyone were to, you know, kind of tear down or rebuild the whatever's next door to us, we'd be interested and concerned. And so a lot of those feelings are normal and to be expected.
Dan Guarino, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Ann.
Dan Guarino covers renewable energy issues for Inside Climate News. Coming up, we're going to hear from people in the academic world about what they know about the impact of solar arrays in former farmland. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Ohio's investment in solar power generation lags behind much of the country, but an increasing number of solar farm projects are in the works in the state, and local reactions have been mixed. We're talking about the pros and cons of solar arrays being installed on Ohio farmland. Peter Schubert is an electrical and computer engineering professor and director of the Richard G. Lugar Center for Renewable Energy at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. Welcome to the show. Hello, Peter. Okay, we'll be working on getting Peter on the show. Brent Sonjan is a professor of environmental and natural resource economics at Ohio State University, where he conducts research on the economics of climate change, energy, and land use management. Brent Sonjan, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann.
Dale Arnold, he's a director of energy, utility, and local government policy for the Ohio Farm Bureau. Welcome to the show, Dale.
Hi, Ann. Thank you.
You know, Dale, I'll start with you. This was in Preble County, where there's a grassroots effort aimed at stopping some solar array projects. And one of the people opposed to it is a guy named Joe DeLuca. And he said, the big picture for me is why would anyone want to take some of the best productive farmland in the state or anywhere and put solar panels on it and take it out of production? Can you talk about that? Is that a conversation folks, you know, at Ohio, the Ohio Farm Bureau are talking about?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I've met Joe DeLuca and had some nice conversations with him and people out there. And that's always a concern. What people need to understand is that there's going to be the need in many areas of the state for open large tracts of ground, basically to accommodate renewable infrastructure, wind, solar, biomass, fuel cell, especially solar. That's part basically the issue. What's also interesting is this, is that when you take a look at wind and solar and the planning that goes into that and the decommissioning plans and things that have to be in place before you even break ground, this is the first real technology where you're seeing that after basically it's retired, there are strategic plans to make sure this ground goes back into agricultural production. And that's always with every case before the Power Siting Board. And in every case we're seeing here in Ohio,
that it's capable of being returned safely to production.
That's correct. That's correct. Very careful things are done with that. It's much different in the 20th century when you saw coal production being the capital use regard to that and strip mining. As you know, in Eastern Ohio, we are still going through a number of challenges with repair, remediation, trying to bring ground back into production. We've learned those lessons well, and we're applying them to wind and solar as we go forward.
The land can't be used for anything else, though, right? For you, typically decades.
Well, what's interesting is this. You're already seeing a number of researchers at Ohio State and Indiana, as well as farmers and others, wanting to do grass and pollinator habitat, wanting to do vegetative management plans, taking a look at possibly shifting the structure on solar arrays to accommodate several types of cultivation agriculture, and also animal husbandry. Sheep production is being taken a look at that can be accommodated in these areas along with solar.
Okay. Peter Schubert, welcome to the show. Are you there?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Peter Schubert, you know, from your work at Indiana University, Purdue University in Indianapolis, where do you look to or where do you go to learn about the long-term impact of building solar arrays on farmland? Where are we learning about this?
Part of the study is in land use changes. So this is often looked at from an environmental and policy standpoint to see what makes most sense for the farmers. A lot of times farmers will look at solar as an opportunity for another cash crop by turning the photons from the sun into electricity instead of into food. So there's an economic aspect to that, which is often the main driver for farmers' decisions.
But once you lock into something like that, it can be decades, right, before you get the land back.
Yeah, it's often 30 years is the typical time, 30 to 35 years is the typical warranty for modern solar panels. At the end of that time, the soil will have rested. If you planted prairie grasses on that land, this can extend the roots down and even build the topsoil to make that deeper, so it counteracts the effects of erosion. At the end of that time, you can remove those solar panels. They have to be disposed of in a responsible manner. But then you could put more solar panels on there again and contribute that towards the energy production for the state.
Is there any sense that the technology is going to change in a way that makes it even more viable going forward?
There's a technology we've been working with Ohio University called Space Solar Power. And in this aspect, you have the solar collection happen in orbit. In orbit, at a high enough orbit, the shadow of the Earth almost never touches the solar panels, so that means you have around-the-clock solar power. So we've been investigating places where we can have receiving antennas, which would be very similar to solar panels, but they would allow more light through. So some of the things that Brent was just mentioning, of being able to grow crops underneath and let ruminants graze there, could happen at the same time that we're delivering around-the-clock power, and that eliminates one of the big objections to solar power is that it's intermittent.
Aha, okay. Brent Sonjan, what about the idea of land use management when it comes to solar arrays? At this point in the technology where we're at right now, are farmers, is this something that a lot of farmers, or I should say landowners, are considering?
Well, in Ohio right now, if we look at all of the sort of projects that are in the planning stages and various stages of it, you know, there's about 60,000 acres that would be potentially used. Probably not all those projects are going to go through, but 60,000 acres of land Now, a lot of that would be on cropland. Some of it would be in areas in the state that are forested, but it's relatively modest amounts in that area. So, yeah, I mean, it's about a 0.5% of the cropland area in the state. So it's not really a huge area of cropland. It's really a bigger issue for, you know, people who live near it. I think as Dan Jarino was talking about earlier, it's just, you know, it's not something that's going to drastically affect our ability to produce crops on the excellent cropland that we have in the state of Ohio. It's not going to have a huge impact in the agricultural sector. You know, in fact, if you look at the sort of jobs per acre, there are right now more jobs per acre produced by solar power than in the agricultural sector itself. So, you know, on the jobs basis, it's a little bit better to go towards solar power, at least on a per acre basis.
Huh. Let's turn to some questions right now. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the pros and cons and how it works when we talk about displacing, even temporarily, farmland for solar arrays. So if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Sarah in Marysville, you're on the air. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. I have a total of 15 acres, but I have 2 acres that would be, I think, an ideal spot for some solar panels. It's right next to a utility pole. It's right next to a major road. And, you know, I'm not sure what the payback or break even is going to be and whether I'd want to lease it or continue to own it. Who do I contact to get all these questions answered, and is it worth bothering with for only 2 acres?
Well, I don't know who can answer all those questions, but maybe Brent Sonjan, I'll start with you. Is Sarah a prospect?
Well, not for an industrial scale solar facility, unless you're located next to one and you can contribute your 2 acres to that. But on the other hand, you know, there are excellent opportunities for you to put in, I think, your own solar facility for your own household to generate your own electricity. And, you know, right now the cost of that have come down so dramatically that, you know, it's break even to better than buying electricity from the grid. And there are net generation possibilities there. There's some restricted rules in Ohio for that, but nonetheless, there's an opportunity for you to do that would provide, you know, certainly, I think, an opportunity for your household to do better. You know, there may be opportunities with neighbors and whatnot, but you're probably a little bit located far from them, so it's probably not a possibility for that. But certainly for yourself, I would encourage you to look into it. And there are companies that can help you do that, you know, located in and around, you know, the city of Columbus.
Sarah, thanks for that call. Let's see. Jeff in Perry County are on the air. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Go ahead.
All right, interesting conversation. I have enough property in several counties to do an industrial size installation.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if it makes money, that would be the economic factor for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my only question is, he keeps talking about degradation of the whatever, like you can't plant crops for so many years. What the heck does that have to do putting something on the top of the ground on perfectly fertile soil in a farm field that you're going to bush hog mow a couple times a year and possibly go around with a little bit of weed whacker around the panel and do the installation and then plant again?
Okay, so
what's going on with this problem with the soil and the environment and all that?
All right.
I don't get any of that.
Okay, well, hang on, Jeff. You know, we're missing a little bit of that, but Dale Arnold, maybe you can address, you know, just the general concerns about the property. It's not like he's going to be able to go in there and bushwhack around the panels.
No, it's interesting. When you're taking a look at working with the Ohio Power Siting Board and understanding that these large utility scale solar projects are considered power generation stations, there is a very strict vegetative management plan that's part of the stipulation and order where that ground and the vegetation needs to be maintained, mowed, noxious weed control, pollinator habitat, those things going on with regard to that. It's interesting too that when you start taking a look at that, before you even start talking with landowners, a lot of solar development companies have to identify a transmission circuit in PJM with additional capacity. They have to work with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, a number of other federal agencies on permitting for interconnection. their very specific places where they're doing with regard to that. And they start talking with landowners. And depending on the plan for the landowner and the family, keeping in agriculture or doing it like our friend in Perry County, just maintaining it, they need to take a look at those things. And that's part of lease negotiations, establishing long-term relationships and partnerships going forward. And we have folks in all areas of the state where you're seeing these with those particular issues, discussing, exploring, taking a look at those issues as they enter lease agreements.
Peter Schubert, is there any kind of a clearinghouse for landowners to learn more, to understand what their obligations are, what they can, what the gains can be, what the challenges are? Or is it always on a owner by owner basis and they're kind of on their own?
And there's a number of online resources. There's a really great tool that's developed by the Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory, which is in Golden, Colorado. That tool is called HOMER. It's all capital letters. It's HOMER.
Mm-hmm.
So at the NREL.gov website, you can download this tool. It'll allow you to do sizing estimates, figure out what your current tariff is, how much you're offsetting, and help you do an economic analysis for that.
Okay, Jeff, hope that helped to start answering your questions. Anybody else? 614-292-8513. Let's take one more from Mike in Plain City. You're on the air. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Ann. What I my thought is there's got to be thousands of really, really big warehouses and factories. And why not put together a coordinated program with the building owners to put solar panels up on the roofs? It wouldn't bother anybody. And in fact, much of the electricity wouldn't have to go to any kind of grid. It could just go straight downstairs. And what they don't use could go. So that's my thought.
Okay. Mike, thank you. Peter Schubert, thoughts about that?
Yeah, the federal processing facility in Indianapolis called the Bean Center was one of the first to do just exactly what Mike is suggesting, and they made 2 acres of their rooftop. This is where all the federal employees have their checks processed, so it's an enormous facility, and they put in this enormous facility on the roof with a small area for testing different types of solar panels, and then they had just a bunch of them there. So this was in 2011. It was the largest rooftop installation in the entire country and produced 2 megawatts. It ran all their operations, which were mostly during the day when the sun is shining, and then the rest of it they could ship out there. So it's a great idea.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. That's Peter Schubert. He's an electrical and computer engineering professor and director of the Richard G. Luger Center for Renewable Energy at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. Also with us, Brent Sonjan. He's professor of environmental and natural resource economics at Ohio State University, where he conducts research on economics and of climate change, energy, and land use management. I guess I'm going to have to say goodbye. No, Brent will stay with us. I guess, Peter Schubert, I have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Very good. I'm glad to help out.
Appreciate it. And also, Dale Arnold will stay with us. He's Director of Energy Utility and Local Government Policy for the Ohio Farm Bureau. So stay with us and bring your questions, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the solar energy picture in Ohio and across the Midwest. A planned 325-megawatt solar farm in Union County illustrates the growing concern about solar projects encroaching on Ohio's farm communities, but some farmers there see value in embracing the technology. Still with us, Brent Sonjan. He's professor of environmental and natural resource economics at Ohio State. Also, Dale Arnold, director of energy utility and local government policy for the Ohio Farm Bureau. Joining us is Tina McMahon. She's a Union County farmer and one of the property owners who has agreed to lease land for the planned solar farm out there. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tina McMahon, you signed a lease for 103 acres of your farm to be used for solar farming. What went into your decision-making on this?
Sadly, it's largely a financial decision. I mean, we're all about the renewable energy as well, and that's exciting to be a part of it. But the last 2 years have been awful for farming. My husband has farmed for, since he graduated from high school in 1981. Mm-hmm. So he's been at it a while, and last year was the worst year. So it was largely a financial decision. It's also, most people know Union County has exploded in the population growth, and traveling from our main hub farm in Somersville, just 5 miles north, downstate Route 31, it's like taking your life in your own hands. Mm. So the fact that we do not have to pack a combine and equipment down there was also a major consideration.
How big is your outfit?
The combine or
No, your whole farm.
The whole. Okay, we farm around 1,000 acres.
Okay,
and then we milk about 80 Holsteins and Brown Swiss.
And when you were negotiating this deal, did they want more land or did you want, I mean, how did you come to 103 acres?
This section is right where they get their access point to the power line, the pole.
Okay.
And so it's a targeted location. And so it's grouped in with other farmers. We're kind of a peanut with just the 103 acres. There's other people that have, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 acres in this. It's about 3,500 acres total. So we're kind of a small fry in it, but we have a large pole at the field where they are accessing it. So there's a 40-acre plot that runs right along State Route 31, and then there's approximately 63 acres behind it that you can't even see from the road, which was also part of our consideration. You know, there'll be panels on it back there and nobody can see them.
Mm-hmm.
So that also kind of went into our thinking. I mean, it was a tough decision doing this.
It's a cost benefit analysis. For 103 acres, you're going to generate more revenue that can support the rest of your farming operation than you would by farming it.
Correct.
Right.
Even if you look at this year, it's been a great year. We've got pretty good yields. We've got a great price. But even if you take the most glorious outcome, it's still going to beat that.
Hmm. And your neighbors, how have they responded?
In September, I was alerted to the Union County Facebook page for people against solar farms.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the dialogue back and forth was, honestly, it was a bit shell-shocking because it characterized us as not knowing what we had done, not understanding, or it characterized the company as coming in and taking our land, which none of it could be true. And Acciona, the company that we're working through, was having a meeting in October. So I felt like it was a little bit premeditated, kind of stirring the pot prior to maybe being able to listen and learn. And that was very frustrating. I got invited in by a couple friends so I could kind of not be on the Facebook page, but see, uh-huh. You know, what was being stated. And it was surprising that the mentality out there. But again, the farmers that the land is all, you know, around York, Washington Township in Northern Union County. So, you know, we haven't really talked to each other that much. And I guess I'm the only one that'll come out and be open and talk to people about it, because the person that started the Facebook page, I contacted him and, you know, explained, you know, what was going on and, you know, requested him to maybe ask some more questions before he you know, upset a lot of people giving out false information.
I wanted to ask Dale Arnold, just kind of Ohio on a larger scale. Dale, is there a disconnect between people like Tina McMahon, who have been approached by the solar companies and that kind of a thing and are working out these deals and know what they're doing, and people who haven't been and are feel like they're on the outside? Because there's been accusations of sneaky behavior, but it doesn't sound like that's what Tina engaged in.
No, you're right. And we're seeing that pattern basically all over the state. It's interesting. I've been in Union County and done meetings and met people on both sides, helped get accurate information out to folks so they can discuss, plan, dialogue. And again, I feel that was a concern. And it's one basically a number of these energy developers really need to tackle. You have some who do a tremendous amount of education, outreach, meetings, talking with people, talking with neighbors, trying to address a number of needs, issues, concerns, and you have others that don't. I've talked to a number of particular companies in dialogue with the Power Siting Board and others. And I tell you this, those who invest a dollar early in the process and do education, outreach, working with folks, addressing concerns, they save $5 in litigation at the other end. That's something we really need to work on here in Ohio.
Brent Sonjan, do you think there is room for, well, I mean, we know that people are already considering different uses for farmland. It's going to develop, you know, huge housing projects. In some places it's being used for drilling, for natural gas. I mean, there already are a lot of multiple uses and ways to manage farmland, right?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. I mean, you know, in the scale of things, this is a pretty modest amount. It's interesting you mentioned fracking. It's about the same amount. If you go to the 10 years of, hydraulic fracturing, the big growth in that industry from, 2010 to, 2018, 19, it was about 60,000 acres of total land that were used for that. So it's about the same amount.
Interesting, yeah.
As we would have here if all these projects actually get developed. So, you know, given all the things that happen out there, this is a pretty – you know, I don't want to minimize, a neighbor-to-neighbor kind of a thing because it's really important, but on the other hand, statewide, it's a pretty small area.
And I'm wondering how much, Dale Arnold, if you could know, or Tina McMahon, maybe you have some insights about this, when there is conflict over something like this, do you get any sense from the solar companies that they have second thoughts about working in Ohio?
This
I think
is Dale.
Our company was.
Tina, why don't you go first?
Ahead, Tina,
yeah,
go ahead.
Axiona actually contacted me after they heard my interview with Nick, and they were appreciative of what I said because there's just, again, so much disinformation out there. And the thing that I brought out was, we requested that the short grasses be planted. We actually talked to Soil Water Conservation about, is this a good decision? What do you suggest? And they suggested we make sure and request that. We also read everything on solar from OSU Ag Extension. They have a nice bunch of literature out, and our attorney was great with that. But he did give us the red flag that people will be upset about it, that they just, it's change, it's different, and they don't particularly like it, and they'll want to, call it a nuisance or call it something inappropriate. But the other thing that Axiona is looking into is the ability to possibly graze sheep and put in pollinator-friendly plants.
Mm-hmm.
So there's other avenues that they are trying to research and find out if that can be done. But I don't think it turned them off. I think it's a full speed ahead project.
Okay.
Because, there's a lot of backstory to this, and I don't know that that's coming out. But it's the Brown County solar farm from mm-hmm. a few years ago.
Yeah.
Our Amazon. And they're right here in central Ohio, and Amazon by 2030 wants to be 100% renewable energy to feed their warehouses and distribution facilities.
Right.
And they're doing nothing but growing. So, you know, there's money behind this project. There has to be. I mean, there's a lot of money going forward. And right here in the other part of our county is a 5,000 plus acre project going on by, we just got the letter yesterday from a Cadence Solar Company. So it's not stopping here.
And these are leases. You're not selling the property. So there's a lot of comfort,
correct,
is there not, in knowing that you're preserving the property, the land?
Correct. Yeah. And that was one thing when we talked to our kids about it. You know, our son was, well, make sure that that's decent and that they'll be taken care of. And that was the other thing in our negotiation. They have an escrow account so that when the lease is done, they have money to put the land back to as close as they can to what it was originally.
So, yeah, go ahead, Dale Arnold. What kind of is the larger story there?
Yeah, I think Tina basically hit the nail on the head. There's a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done in different things. Transparency is key, accurate information, getting out information to people. A lot of folks are finding out this, that when you talk about an energy project, it's more than just a relationship between a lessee and an energy development company. County and township government need to be involved. Neighbors need to be involved. Economic development groups, the power siting board rules allow you to negotiate a number of stipulations and agreements with regard to quality of life for the community, taking a look at those particular types of things. I'll tell you this, I see this all over the state, and I do, through county farm bureaus, a number of kitchen table meetings, county farm bureau briefings, local government briefings to bring people up to speed to discuss these issues, understand what's going on, and getting them involved in the process. And as I said, that work needs to be done going forward.
And Brent Sonjan, where does the likes of Ohio State University stand on this? I mean, where does this fit into that larger matrix of climate change, energy, and land use management that you study? Do you see this becoming a big issue?
Yeah, you know, Tina hit the nail on the head. You know, big, you know, companies, virtually every company out there now, big company, small company, whatever, has a carbon goal, a renewable energy goal, and the demand for renewable energy is growing dramatically, and it's going to continue growing dramatically. And if Ohio wants to be, attract companies and have employment in the future, it's going to have more renewable energy developed within the state. You know, right now, you know, we import most of our renewable energy actually from outside of the state. If we want to be a player in the future with just any kind of a industry, and Amazon is a great example, but, you know, Microsoft, you just keep going down the list of every industry, uh-huh, and even Ohio-based industries, you know, we have to do this. We have to develop more renewable energy in the state.
You know, then I guess I'll throw this one at you. What is the situation in the Ohio General Assembly then? Most of them, it's obviously controlled by Republicans. It's more than it's ever been before. Many of whom are from rural areas. Where's the disconnect here?
Well, I tell you, you're seeing a tremendous amount of discussion with regard to energy development, not only wind and solar, but also pipeline transmission, oil and gas drilling. You're seeing a number of things happening in the state at a very rapid pace. You're seeing a lot of dialogue between state representatives, senators, local governments with regard to, okay, we see these particular systems and infrastructure coming in. How do we make sure everyone basically has a seat at the table to help how they're being developed,
uh-huh,
without getting run over? And I think that's the theme going forward in different things. In that particular discussion, will continue to go forward. I tell people this, energy development is not an event.
Yeah,
it's a process. And this process is going to take years and decades and will continue to develop. And we need to be there at the table basically to discuss it. Because I'll tell you this, if you're not at the table, you will be part of the menu.
Interesting way to put it. Okay. Dale Arnold, Director of Energy Utility and Local Government Policy for the Ohio Farm Bureau. Thank you for your time today, Dale. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
And Tina McMahon, Union County farmer, is leasing land for a planned solar farm there. Tina, best wishes for every success going forward.
Thank you.
And Brent Sonjan, professor of environmental and natural resource economics at Ohio State, thanks for your time as well. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.